Okay, it's time to talk wheels. It's the Car Guy Show with automotive consumer tips, industry updates, interviews, and enthusiast news. If you care about cars, this show's for you. Now you're tuned in, so let's get tuned up with your host. Here he is, Steve Ford, the Car Guy.
Hello and welcome to another segment of the Car Guy Show here, coming at you from the broadcast tower of News Talk 990 KTMS and at the speed of light on the World Wide Web. We're connecting you to automotive consumer and enthusiast news, insights, and interviews anywhere you're hearing our signal in Santa Barbara and the surrounding communities. In today's program, we're moving in for a close-up view of the Los Angeles Auto Show, where the needle of our car calendar points north to 2013 and beyond. And in what you're going to be hearing straight ahead, we'll visit on the auto show floor with a few insiders, including a look at the Green Car of the Year, all pointing to the best of what's ahead for transportation and our small planet. Thanks for tuning in today. Let's first go straight to what makes the LA Auto Show a leader in the global automotive marketplace, from Highway 1 and the Pacific Ocean to what people drive to the Academy Awards. It's all here in California. We're going to swing over to the show floor and talk to Brendan Flynn, Director of Communication, about what is the Golden State.
California is the biggest luxury car market in North America, and L.A. is has the biggest sales.
So you see it here, and I should tell folks, we're at the Aston Martin display, surrounded by Bond, James Bond, that is, 007, memorabilia, Aston Martin, the DB6 replica with the ejection seat. Radio is the theater of the mind. I've got to tell people, this is elegant.
This is Concourse Hall, which is usually kind of a performance hall and a specialty vehicle hall, but we have luxury vehicles all over the place.
Aston Martin, we have Callaway Corvette.
At Morgan, which is a custom kind of coach build vehicle. And then, I mean, you can't forget Bentley, which is in the South Hall. And, of course, Mercedes and BMW and Audi all have cars over $125,000.
You wonder where people get this money, but this is Los Angeles, and this is where the cubic dollars come in.
California is Porsche's number one market in the world. The Rolls-Royce dealership in Beverly Hills does the largest volume out of any dealership in the world, including China and the Middle East and everywhere. So people forget of the power and the status that people really strive for out here in Los Angeles with their cars.
Pacific Coast Highway is an image on a postcard, but in reality, Rodeo Drive, Sunset Boulevard, Wilshire Boulevard, see and be seen. And then the comeback of downtown Los Angeles. This is all part of the LA Auto Show. You expect to see these kinds of cars, not just at an auto show, but driving the city streets. 50 vehicle debuts confirmed for the 2012 show. Is this a record number?
You know, we had a similar amount last year, but it really comes down to the significance and the newsworthiness of the debuts. And this year, I think we have some real showstoppers. Mercedes went all out with a concept that's envisioning what their iconic G-Class wagon is going to look like in the future.
Adapting to the marketplace as the evolution of luxury and practicality goes, that shows.
Well, you know, we have 16, I think, advanced design studios here in Southern California, which most people don't really know, that Southern California is a huge design center for the auto industry. And so we see a lot of concepts here in LA that were designed locally in these studios. So it wasn't really until 2006 when the LA Auto Show moved its date to November. So now we kick off the auto show season in November. And then it goes to Detroit, and then it goes to Chicago, and then New York. So after that date change, our debuts went from maybe having, 19 total debuts to now we have 50. We used to have maybe 3,000 people come to press days, and I think we probably had close to 12 or 13,000 this year. You know, we used to get a couple international journalists, and now we have 25% of our media are from overseas. They come from 50 different countries. So it's just been a dramatic change since now the manufacturers can fully leverage the power of LA, not only for media, it's the second biggest media market, but then you get the twofer that it's also a huge, huge consumer market, and we're going to be close to a million consumer attendees here.
And for folks that might want to take in the show dates running starting this weekend.
Yep, we open up on Friday, and we run through December 9th, so it's 10 public days. Kids 12 and under are free.
There's dealerships and venues where you can pick up coupons. What's the tip?
Yeah, absolutely. Various dealerships will. Some of them are giving away complete comp tickets if you come in and take test drives or whatever. But, I mean, our full price ticket's only $12. So
kids under 12 free, $12 for adults. Green Car of the Year coming up, and that's announced tomorrow. Of course, by the time people hear this, it'll be announced in the media. But we have now, when you consider the lineup, I mean, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, people only saw these in engineering prototypes. Now we're driving hybrids, EVs, natural gas. This year's finalists include the Dodge Dart Aero, the Ford C-Max, the Ford Fusion, the Mazda CX-5, and the Toyota Prius C. And the Toyota Prius has become so mainstream that, for example, in Santa Barbara, you see the Prius almost like the family car.
Yeah, I heard one in every four Priuses sold in North America is right here in California.
And the early adopter state.
Absolutely. And so you'll see several electric vehicles being debuted here this year, and a lot of them go on sale first in California. When the Volt debuted, it sold first in California. Same with the Leaf. So California and Los Angeles specifically are the largest purchasers of electric vehicles and hybrids and plug-in hybrids. So we're seeing not only a proliferation of electric cars and plug-ins, in addition to the hybrids, which have been out for a while. But we're seeing clean diesels are really taking off here. And you're seeing that a lot with some of the luxury brands as well. So now you can get a performance luxury sedan that get 30 miles per gallon highway, but you feel like you're driving a big V8. So you really can have your cake and eat it too nowadays.
To me, the ultimate would be the turbo diesel hybrid. I mean, then you have turbo power, diesel efficiency for the internal combustion engine, and you have the hybrid balance, and you're moving toward an EV, but until we get to an EV that has the battery capacity, the diesel working its way in is great. No one even blinks over there. Here, we look at it like it's an anomaly. When you see it in a luxury car like a BMW and it's smooth and quiet, then it changes the perception. It's not like a diesel truck with a smokestack blown out, billowing black smoke. You asked for it, we built it, now buy it.
Oh, yeah, I think there are at least a dozen of them out there now that you can buy.
Brendan Flynn, Director of Communication for the LA Auto Show. Thanks for your time today. Good luck this next week. And for all the auto manufacturers, I know you said before we flipped on the microphone, 2013 looks like it's going to be a good year for the auto.
Yeah, absolutely. We're excited. Thanks.
Thank you for your time. Now let's head out for a break and visit our commercial sponsors for the show here in Santa Barbara, Ventura counties, and for your time with us in this show, learning about what's ahead for automobiles. When we come back, we're going to answer a trivia question I want to toss out to all of you. We've got a unique guest coming up from the show floor, and that is Eric Dahlquist, who's former editor of Motor Trend magazine. He was involved with making a legend for that famous Knight Rider car, the Firebird. Now, the question is, what car do you think was the runner-up that might have been the famous star car in that series on TV that made the Firebird famous, Knight Rider, that talking, thinking, computerized car? When we come back, we'll hit that and pick up where we left off, talking with Eric Dahlquist straight ahead. Stay with us. When it comes to keeping your wheels looking like new, whether you're a passionate car buff or a daily commuter who simply seeks the best in value and integrity, there's a name in Santa Barbara that fits both profiles. Tri-County Auto Glass. Today's auto glass installers all have to service more sophisticated and precise automobiles than just a decade ago. And while the majority of auto glass businesses have state-of-the-art tools and equipment, what we all know is harder to find are the industry-certified craftspeople and the highest levels of customer service, which is why Tri-County Glass customers range from Concord Elegance level show car owners to everyday family sedan and pickup truck owners. Rock chip repairs or glass replacement with lifetime repair credit and 30 years in Santa Barbara, while a positive word of mouth reputation may bring you in, courtesy, quality, and that new window glass shine will bring you back. Tri-County Auto Glass, downtown Santa Barbara. Call them or stop in for a quote on a window repair or replacement today. 963-6200. That's 963-6200.
I'm Scott Budo, owner, manager, and a certified auto glass technician. At Tri-County Auto Glass, we are about quality, safety, and value.
So you're one of those lucky car enthusiasts who has the privilege of owning a rare, vintage, antique, or maybe one of those British specialty cars, the kind that makes heads turn and brings compliments at stoplights. Let's say a Model A Ford, a 29 Buick, or one of those stunning Packards from the 1930s. But one of the challenges of these rare vehicles is finding an auto professional who can wake up that historic machine so the engine will sing that special tune, or have headlights that both glow equally. Maybe just an old-fashioned tune-up the way it used to be, or even servicing that other ancient device, a carburetor. Sounds like a long time ago? Not at East West Motors, where servicing, repairing, and reviving mechanical gems is a daily craft. Owned and operated by a veteran Concord Elegance judge who knows what 100-point quality looks like. At East West Motors, you experience what 100-point collector car service feels like. Call 965-7003. That's 965-7003. 303. It's the best shop this side of Radiator Springs.
My name is Roy Miller, and I approve of this message.
Hey, you know about getting the job done right. If you want it done right, do it yourself. Well, that's what car and truck buffs, owners of classics, custom cars, and wise consumers know when they visit Daily Car Bath, Santa Barbara's downtown coin-operated car wash supercenter for more than 40 years. After discovering Daily Car Bath for my own cars, I've returned to give my machines the superior wash and cleaning care that all car buffs appreciate. At Daily Car Bath, you'll find premium hog's hair wash brushes with conditioned soft water and five stalls with foaming high-sudsing auto shampoo that literally floats debris off your vehicle's finish, along with consistent high-pressure washing and available non-acid low-pressure wheel and tire cleaner. And for that special finish, DINI spot-free rinse to help dissolve and eliminate mineral spot, and spray wax formulated with clear coat protectant included in the cycle. See why Daily Car Bath is known as the place where customers send their friends. And take it from a fellow car buff, when it comes to the best in car care appearance, you'll find it all at Daily Car Bath, open 24 hours a day at the corner of Anna Kappa and Coda Streets. Quality, economy, and that showroom shine.
In the old-time movies, you used to see an automobile junkyard as a place with rusty old wrecks and big cranes scrapping obsolete machines. Those days were black and white, and today's a world of digital full color. And in the new era of the green car, Steelhead Auto Recycling is at the leading edge of used auto parts. As new and future cars approach 100% recyclability, more than 70% of even older car and truck parts find new life as they come back in service at Steelhead Auto Recyclers, which means huge savings for you. You'll save on major parts such as engines and transmissions, but you can also repair and refresh your wheels with money-saving body trim and accessory parts, from hubcaps to glass, doors, fenders, taillights, and accessories. With a full-service counter and national parts search power and the new self-service section at Steelhead Auto Recycling, you'll save both ways, plus the security of a full 90-day warranty on all parts. Digital on the web at buyused.net or analog by phone at 683-8557. That's 683-8557. Steelhead Auto Recycling.
All right, we're back. Let's go continue our conversation, picking up with Eric Dahlquist. Continuing the adventure here on the LA Auto Show floor, seeing all the new cars, but talking about marketing of vehicles, I stop and speak with former editor of Motor Trend Magazine and on to placing cars in the motion picture world, the Vista Group. We're with Eric Dahlquist, former editor of Motor Trend Magazine. I know you love writing, but you love placing cars in the movies. And we talked here for a minute, and you said that we would talk about how the Firebird became famous in the TV series Knight Rider.
That's right, with David Hasselhoff.
Yeah. And Firebird made him famous too.
It could be.
Car was a star.
And it started out actually in a marketing meeting back at Pontiac. The general manager at that time wanted to get something more in the Bond, you know, a James Bond kind of, you know,
gadgets and gimmicks.
Gadgets and gimmicks like the Aston Martin and so forth. And he said to me, he says, Eric, he said, you guys represent us in the movies. See if you can find a part for us that fills that role that we'd like to use for the new Firebird that was coming out in 1982.
But it wasn't a sure bet. There's other cars that could have been run.
Yes, there was. The initial car that they looked at, that Glenn Larson, the producer of Knight Rider, looked at, was a 280Z. And they were going to use that car, and it just so happened that a good friend of mine named Harker Wade, who was a line producer on the show as it was starting to ramp up, saw me in church. And after Mass, said, hey, you guys are doing Pontiac. Aren't you coming out with a new car for 82? And I said, yes, we are. And he said, hey, we got a show that it might fit in, and we'd rather use something new and different and an American car rather than a foreign car, you know. And
it was in that wave of patriotism.
It was in that wave of patriotism when people thought about things like that. And I said, we sure do.
Still matters.
And in any event, through a chain of events, we put together a deal with Glenn Larson and Universal Studios to use the Firebird, and you know,
the 280Z had to wait for its turn in another venue somewhere. But the Firebird took off, and it was the sales must have. What was the impact in the marketplace?
Oh, there was a definite spike in the sales. We had done Smokey and the Bandit before that with the previous model Firebird, and there was a spike in the sales at that time too. And
in that story, it's being at the right place at the right time. But what's today, here going into 2013, we look at placement in movies, and there's a whole cachet of vehicles and behind-the-scenes things going on. The car still has to be spectacular. What's the main thing that gets a car in a movie, besides money?
Exactly. Showing up is 90% of the deal, and you know, and you got to be at the right place at the right time. It's got to be the right vehicle and the right show to be in. It's got to be a good fit. It's got to look natural. It can't look forced. All the things that are there, you know, since the beginning of movies, you know, still are required as far as a good placement goes.
Aston Martin still is Bond's car, but
Aston Martin has changed. I mean, they have been, and you know, it's been Mercury at one point. It was BMW a couple of years, yeah. And then it got back to Aston Martin.
You drove a Mustang in Las Vegas.
Yes, and I think the reason it went back to Aston Martin, among other things, was that the audience, you know, really perceives James Bond driving an Aston, and that's
a British car.
Yeah, it is a British car, and it's a very exclusive car. It's a trick car, and I think you really need that car in that role.
Yeah, happy for Aston Martin too. Rolex lost out on the wristwatch game. Now it's some other company. It's Omega.
So yeah,
product placement. Well, folks, that's some behind the scenes in the movie car world. That's how Knight Rider ended up with a Firebird, not a 280Z Datsun, right? Nissan.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
We got to have you back on to talk about the movie car world.
Good enough. Anytime, Steve, just give me a call.
All right. And it's Eric Dahlquist, former editor for a number of years, Motor Trend Magazine, and then off to the Vista Group, and now a movie car guy.
Yeah, you bet.
Keeping you movie-wise, it's Eric Dahlquist.
See you all later.
And we move over to Ron Kogan, editor and publisher of Green Car Journal, for that actual announcement about the vehicle that has been recognized by the industry and the leaders on his judging team for Green Car of the Year for 2013. And Ron, it's good to have you on the show. You've been pretty excited about making this announcement. I felt like the last few times we talked over days, as far back as a week ago, you probably would imagine someone like me would be wanting to say, hey Ron, can't you tell me, just let's quietly talk about who the winner is. At the Auto Show press preview days, you've been holding that to yourself. Let's hear who the winner is of those special cars that you decided upon, those last five.
Our 2013 Green Car of the Year is the Ford Fusion, and we're pretty proud of that.
That's great. Ford Motor Company on a resurgence in the marketplace against Dodge Dart Aero, Ford C-Max, the Mazda CX-5, Sky Active, and the Toyota Prius C. That's a pretty tough lineup to get into and even outdo the competition. Tell us very quickly, just off the top, for your judging team, how do you distinguish between those all competitive vehicles? They all offer outstanding fuel economy. They're all a small footprint as far as a carbon footprint goes, these modern terms that we talk about. And they're all engineered with the best of everything that each manufacturer has. What do you, you're slicing numbers very tightly there, some subjective. What's the judging criteria?
Well, you know, it is really challenging to do this, and we have guidelines for the program, but we also encourage our jurors to bring their own perspectives and sensibilities to the table. And I'm sure that Jay Leno is looking at the vehicle choices differently than someone from the leadership of Sierra Club or Natural Resources Defense Council.
Even as you say that, the audience might not know the judges comprise of Jay Leno, among others. I mean, you mentioned him, and people should know Jay Leno is actually not just a celebrity judge. He's one of your, how many judges do you have?
We have 10 this year. We had 11 last year, and we've had that consistently, but the industry lost Carroll Shelby this last year. Very sad about that.
Sure.
He was one of our jurors, an automotive icon. He cared about this program. He cared about Green Car Journal.
He saw the future.
Side of him that a lot of people did not know existed. He cared about green technology. So we went down from 10, from 11 to 10 this year.
Yeah, Jeff, there was a titan in the industry and a loss, but then you've got Jay Leno, and you've also got some folks from the Sierra Club, representatives of Ocean Futures.
Yeah. Jean-Michel Cousteau from Ocean Futures Society, and the Francis Beinecke from Natural Defense, Resources Defense Council, Matt Peterson from Global Green USA.
So, top level.
And we have our Green Car Journal editors as well that are on the panel.
Of that group, they feel the credibility of what you're doing for the audience to understand. This is not a calculation by numbers, just the fuel economy and efficiency of recyclable components and so on. There's more to it. There's some subjective. What are the categories? How do you, you score in 10 categories, 5 categories? What's the breakdown?
Well, it's really not a matter of categories. We have guidelines.
Okay.
And in the guidelines, you know, we want to make sure that the vehicle that is Green Car of the Year has major impacts on emissions and energy use, oil displacement, CO2 emissions. Beyond that, we look at smaller slices of that can influence the decision, including a total environmental load or use of environmental materials and cradle to grave impacts. And I think about the high line decisions though are focused on fuel efficiency and on energy use. Because I think that really impacts our daily lives, and it really leads us in a good direction.
Well, so you're saying at the end of the whole process, the highest value component of your decision-making is really what is effectively kind of quantitative. You don't even need to do a test drive for those figures. That would be emissions output at the exhaust and efficiency of the powertrain and the power plant itself. How much do you think you'd say weighs on the subjective opinion of the drivers that check the vehicles out? I mean, Jay Leno obviously has a different sense of driving a vehicle than, say, one of your other executives on the jury who are not necessarily car savvy in terms of how the vehicle handles and drives. They're maybe not car people. Is that a factor?
Well, you know, it may be that the leader of one of the major environmental groups is not necessarily a car person in the same way our staff might be or Leno, but they have a team. They have transportation directors, and they have a team who thoroughly understand this industry because it's in their best interest to try to influence the direction of the automotive industry to achieve the goals that are important to them. They have well-versed people who understand cars, who may still look at it from a different direction than Jay Leno, but they're very astute.
Sounds like an elector. Sounds like a Green Car of the Year electoral decision vote, kind of, you know. But I follow it. But it makes sense. It's a composite. In other words, the input of each of the jury members reflects the best of their efforts to make an informed decision whether they're car savvy or not. They're definitely environmentally savvy, and they have a team of people that they're representing in each organization. Is that a fair way to frame it?
Yeah, I would think it would be a fair assessment to say that the juror who is from a major environmental organization has advisors who are sharing their perspective.
Yeah.
In the end, the vote is for the leader of an environmental organization, but clearly they are going to go to their team and tell them, okay, we have our juror packet, we have the specs, we have the analysis of these vehicles, we understand this, what is your experience with these vehicles? And yeah, it is a very informed decision. And I should say, by the way, Green Car of the Year is determined by a majority vote of our jurors. You know, not everybody will be in agreement every year on the single vehicle that's chosen.
I like that. Now
it's a majority vote.
Sure. Now I understand why you call it a jury and not the group of judges, because it is a jury, and you probably have a collective decision that comes out of some debate.
I mean, there are always questions about this. So, you know, we will get questions. And Carroll Shelby used to call me after he'd get his juror packet, and he'd say, Ron, tell me a little more about this. I mean, he was well-informed, but at the same time, he was seeking more information. And of course, we've, as staff, we've driven the five finalists. We have to, and we share that information with our jurors.
Sure. Sure. Ron, let's do something for the audience here along those lines of making those decisions that you would endorse their making. Now they've got to go out in 2013 and beyond to make decisions about vehicles. You and I have gone way back. We go back more than 20 years as colleagues and friends. And I think about watching you when I was still more fascinated with hydrocarbon vehicles than I am with EVs and hybrids and hydrogen and so on. As we go into the 21st century, it's inevitable that we're moving toward a clear path that leads to EVs. So hybrids are a bridge to electric vehicles. And as we go into 2013, I know that some of the quoted material in the press information from the LA Auto Show indicates that U.S. hybrid car sales increased 63.5% during the first 6 months of 2012, while the industry remained at a pretty good number, increased 14.9% in the same period. So clearly hybrids are surging forward. Where do you see the industry going in terms of when we might be 100% hybrid, or do you have any projections you're comfortable making, or just kind of what you expect to see in the next, let's say by 2015, we'll have hybrids in the marketplace? And we've been waiting for this to happen, obviously, since you started in 1992, right?
Well, you know, what's interesting is I am comfortable making a prediction. Okay. And, you know, it's for 20 years, I haven't just written about this. I've been an auto analyst, yeah. And I try to see where the trends are and what's going to emerge. What I've seen is something that I really felt would be the case a long time ago,
yeah.
that one day would come that when you can go to a dealership, find a model that really speaks to you. After you've test-driven different models, you've looked at the styles, the safety ratings, you go in for that model, and then you can select from a conventional efficient power plant or a hybrid power plant or a plug-in power plant that lets you achieve your mobility goals while also addressing your environmental sensitivities. This is what's occurred with the Ford Fusion. The Ford Fusion is the very first model that offers these kinds of choices in this depth. And I think by 2015, you're going to see a lot of these vehicles that are offering this depth of powertrain choices. That is the future.
Yeah.
Now, we may get to that point where one technology or fuel is dominant. We're not there, and we're not going to be there by 2015. We are going to have choice. So choice is the big change that I see.
But now, that's funny. You make a prediction. That sounds inevitable. What about when we'll see 100% of the products coming in hybrid or, let's say, clean diesel?
I don't know that we will ever see 100% until there's a shift in our primary energy source for this country.
Yeah.
You know, we've, as a civilization, we've gone from different primary energy sources. This is the age of oil. That will pass at some point. Nobody knows when that will pass. And I think hydrogen is a strong contender for stationary power generation, for powering our vehicles.
Yeah.
But who knows when that's going to happen. There's no good prediction that can go with that, because so much depends on investment.
It's not
so much breakthroughs. Automakers make wonderful hydrogen fuel cell cars that drive just like any other vehicle, but they remain expensive.
And the distribution of the hydrogen fuel. Well, it comes back to that
engineer's
quote, there's no such thing as a scheduled breakthrough, right?
Well, and see, this is what people have expected with battery technology. I've followed battery technology now for over 20 years, and yes, there was always a breakthrough expected, always. It still isn't here. We have better batteries, better chemistry that are still extraordinarily expensive.
Yeah.
So we haven't had the breakthrough. That's why I can't predict, you know, when we will have 100% penetration of electric vehicles, for instance. It's all about the battery, and you can't predict when that will come.
Ron, 20 years ago, you began, and I just want to give a quick plug for your next step here briefly as we wind down. You did another announcement this Thursday at the show, and that is about your Kickstarter.com fundraiser for your 20th anniversary. Give us a quick one on that.
Yeah, well, we wanted to produce the 20th anniversary issue of Green Car Journal. This has been on our mind for some time. It's a pretty big undertaking, and it involves a lot of perspective looking back at 20 years, where we've come from, where we're going, why certain technologies failed, why they're back again, the vehicles we're driving now, the ones we're going to be driving in the future. So we've turned that project over to the nonprofit 501c3 Green Car Institute as a project. And the Institute is is going to be producing the 20th anniversary issue with all of this wonderful information, sending copies to the libraries at schools and colleges across the country because it's important.
Complimentary copies. To inform, yeah.
Complimentary okay. copies, yeah, and they'll be okay. for sale to others.
Right,
but the same information.
Because of your efforts with Kickstarter, you're going to help make it possible for young people and others at libraries and schools to have free information about the Green Car stories.
Yeah, okay. That's correct. And so this is a funding yeah. campaign. It's because it's a nonprofit institute, and those who want more information can go to greencars.org online. Look at the institute. There's a link to Kickstarter, which is a crowdfunding source. People can help projects that they feel.
Santa Barbara is a marketplace where there are huge numbers of people now. And I shouldn't say huge, but very large, significantly larger than probably the national population average. You know, per thousand driving hybrid or alternative energy vehicles. And I just want to ask you, for those that are curious in the marketplace about this, you know, this is an interesting overview conversation, but specifics, Cars of Change, is that the other website? Cars of Change?
Yeah. The website that carries a lot of the content from Green Car Journal is carsofchange.com.
So Cars, C-A-R-S, of change.com. All right.
That's correct, and you can go there and see a lot of the material from the
Fantastic. So, Ron Kogan, editor and publisher of Green Car Journal, congratulations on your 20th year celebration and also the announcement of the Ford Fusion as Green Car. I want to say Car of the Year. That wouldn't be right. It's too unique. Green Car of the Year. Ron Kogan, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, Dave.
And thank you all for joining us for this segment on the World of Wheels. And this brings us to a close of another visit with all of you here on the Car Guys Show. Join us here again next week for another segment live from the Coastal Riviera right here in Santa Barbara on News Talk 990 KTMS. Keeping you car wise, I'm Steve Ford, the Car Guy.